You're still live, your news night is on Joy 99.7 FM. Some news just coming in. As you know, on the back of that SML investigations by the Media Foundation for West Africa's Fourth Estate, the presidency was criticized for not releasing the full report. They filed an RTI request asking for the full KPMG report, where the president obviously has commissioned on the back of the investigations into the scandal that ensued when we got to know about the deal between GRA and SML. Tonight, we have a statement confirming from the presidency that they have now released that full report, pursuant to an RTI request filed by the Media Foundation for West Africa. And my colleague Ojo Brace is joining me with a statement that has just been issued from the presidency. What do you know?
No, it says, bearing in mind the provisions of the RTI Act, particularly Section 51A and B1 of the Act, the president denied the request of the Media Foundation for West Africa since the KPMG report constitutes matters exempt under Section 5 of the RTI Act. Section 51A and B1 of the RTI Act states that, quote, information is exempt from disclosure where the information is prepared for submission or has been submitted to the president or vice president for consideration or contains matters the disclosure of which would reveal information concerning opinion, advice, deliberation, recommendation, minutes, or consultation made or given to the president or vice president and is likely to undermine the deliberative process on the part of the president or vice president, unquote. It says, furthermore, there has been judicial pronouncement in a case involving Media Foundation for West Africa that a request which falls within the categories of information exempt under the RTI Act can be lawfully declined. The KPMG report comprises opinions and all of that. It says it is important to recount that even before the request from the Media Foundation for West Africa, the president had on April 24, 2024, caused to be published a detailed press statement outlining KPMG's findings and recommendations, as well as his directives to the Ministry of Finance and the GRA. Says the Office of the President reiterated the necessity of those for those who file applications and requests under the RTI Act to have a thorough understanding of its provisions. It is vital to appreciate that the legal framework for access to information includes safeguards intended to protect the sanctity of decision-making at the highest levels of government, which must not be compromised or misused in the pursuit of access to information. However, the president, in the interest of full transparency in governance, openness, and honesty with the public, has decided to waive the privilege under Section 5 of the RTI Act and has directed the publication of the KPMG report in full. A copy of the KPMG report can be accessed from the website of the presidency, www.presidency.gov.gh.
And we're all going to go to the presidency's website,
download
it, and read it for ourselves. Organized the Coalition of Civil Society Organizations today at the press conference, demanded the publication of this full report. And just shortly thereafter, we're getting the confirmation from the presidency that indeed it has been published. We'll verify that and bring you the details in there as and when we get to appreciate it a bit more. And I want to bring in right now the minority spokesperson on Mines and Energy, who joins us right now. That's John Jinapoy. And as you know, they themselves also raise questions. They had intended to bring this to the attention of the speaker, and they had also wanted full disclosure around the KPMG report. He joins us right now on the telephone line. Mr. Jinapoy, thank you very much for your time here on Newsnight. I mean, this is just breaking in the last few minutes as the presidency has now decided to upload a full report on the presidency's website. Your reaction? Okay, we'll get him on the line. Unfortunately, we don't have him right now. And I want to hear from you. This is a call that has been made by many, including the civil society organizations who did so today again. And I want to share a few of your messages on the stories that we've been doing so far, including, obviously, the controversy around the snit sale of 60% stake in four top hotels, including the Labadi Beach Hotel. And Nana Ikwama Wating says, Samokuduta Blakwa should give us a break. Golden Tulip Hotel was sold to a Lebanese company and is now Lancaster Hotel. Okuduto is happy that a hotel that snit had 60% stake in was sold to the white, but for Brian Champon to buy a hotel from snit is a crime. He's asking there. Also, this one from Abochi Philip from Keita says, in fact, the deployment of the police officers at the EC offices in the Volta region are too much. Applicants are free to register. And that's an issue relating to the ongoing voter registration exercise that, of course, he has an interest in. And has sent us a message on, of course, it's a story that is still developing as people across the country queue to register, many of them for the very first time. I still want to hear from you, 0551111997. Now, the Public Interest and Accountability Committee is warning that the Ghana Gas Company could suffer a major hit operationally if its indebtedness to Ghana National Petroleum Company, GNPC, is not addressed immediately. In its 2023 annual report, PIAC said Ghana Gas' cumulative indebtedness for the supply of raw gas stood at over $604 million. But Ghana Gas says a rise in its debt is a result of the Volta River Authority's inability to meet its debt obligation service. Now, let's take a listen to the chairperson of PIAC. That's Professor Elizabeth Adefio Shandoff. We'll hear from her pretty shortly, but we have details of the PIAC report which was released, and I have with me Kojo Brace, who of course is the head of our energy desk with me in the studio. Kojo, What are the details of this?
Well, so I mean, the cumulative indebtedness of Ghana Gas to GNPC for the supply of raw gas stood at $604 million dollars at the end of December 2023, which was a 7.8% increment on the cumulative stock of debt of $560 million recorded at the end of 2022. Ghana National Gas Company Limited. The rise in its indebtedness to GNPC was primarily due to the inability of the VRA to meet its debt service obligations. Now, to address the associated systemic risk, a part of the outstanding balance has been reclassified as energy sector legacy debt. This means that the sequestered portion of the debt will be retired with inflows from the energy sector levy.
A lot of details there to unpack, and on PM Express and I will do so. Just looking at them and talking to PIAC itself, just want to start a bit more how this happened. But the committee also flagged the decline in oil production for conservative years.
Exactly. The committee is worried that since we started oil production in 2011, till the end of 2023, it looks like the production has been declining year on year. Now, it says crude oil production declined for the fourth consecutive year in 2023. Production dropped from a high of 71.44 million barrels in 2019 to 48.25 million barrels in 2023, representing an annual average decline of 9.2%. The report says the decline cut across the Ghana's three fields. Ghana made $1.43 billion from crude oil sales and taxes in 2023, over 25% less than the previous year. Now, PIAC says the decline in revenues can be attributed to an interplay of lower production volumes and relatively lower international crude oil prices.
Let's start there. Let's unpack that a bit more, because that affects our bottom line as a country. Where I want to bring in right now, Ishmael Ejukumhene is an energy analyst and he's been watching that sector very closely. Thank you very much, Mr. Ejukumhene, for the time here on Newsnight. That report there, cataloging the decline in oil productions, is a cause of concern, is it not? I mean, considering where we are as an economy and considering that oil production over the years has become one of the key places we fall on to show up our revenue numbers, seeing that for four consecutive years has been on a consistent decline, should trigger some reactions from the authorities, should it not?
Good evening, Ivan, to your listeners. Yes, certainly. But it's also not as if we didn't know this was going to happen. I mean, when we discovered oil, several years ago, it was clear. My organization, for example, set out to manage expectations when we started talking about the fact that we don't have an industry yet. It's just we have an oil field. We don't have an industry. And there was a definite timeline. The projection was that Jubilee, for example, maximum 20 years, the reserves would have completely depleted. So if we weren't aggressively bringing more fields on board, then this industry was definitely going to be short-lived. And the peak production from Jubilee, which is the main oil production field, I think they've hit that and there's a steady decline now. I haven't read in detail exactly what is causing, especially this year, what led to the decline in production. But for any oil field, you start producing, then you peak and it plateaus for a period, and then there's consistent decline until the field is no longer commercially viable. So yes, 11 years, 12 years, 13 years into oil production, this is expected, bearing in mind that apart from Jubilee, we only added 10, which was a relatively smaller field. And then Sankofa is predominantly gas. So yes, this should be expected until all these other discoveries are coming to commercial production. The existing field bound to decline.
And also want to flag that issue they also raised at Ghana Gas Company, and that they currently owed some $604 million by the Ghana National Petroleum Company. Is actually one that the PIAC is saying is threatening the Ghana Gas sustainability and its operational efficiency, and that it actually is facing a great peril down the line. Why is it that they are unable to recover this money?
It's very simple. Sorry, I'm getting some echo. Do you hear me?
I do loud and clear.
Okay. So, I mean, ever since I was even on PIAC, I was part of the pioneering members. I left in 2014. That was the issue. Ghana Gas wasn't being paid. And why wasn't Ghana Gas being paid? The gas they produce, the lean gas, is used by VRA, mainly VRA, to produce electricity. When VRA produces electricity, VRA is not being paid by ECG. So it's almost like a vicious cycle of indebtedness. And because Ghana Gas is not being paid, Ghana Gas is also owing GMPC for the raw gas they take from the Jubilee field. So yes, it's the debt keeps mounting, and I believe the only reason why Ghana Gas is still supplying gas to VRA is government to government. You know, Ghana Gas is owned 100% by government of Ghana, VRA 100% government of Ghana. Check the gas from the West African gas pipeline. If we don't pay and we are owing $10 million, they stop supply. So that's the problem. The problem with Ghana Gas is linked to the power sector, because almost 80%, 90% of the lean gas goes into power production. So if we don't resolve that problem with the indebtedness in the power sector, ECG's inability to collect all the revenues and be able to pay everybody in the value chain, when you look at the cash waterfall mechanism, Ghana Gas only gets a fraction of what they bill. So you see their invoices in the PIAC report, you see invoiced amounts and actual payment they are getting. And that has been happening for the past, I mean, since 2014 when Ghana Gas started operating. The reason why they keep producing is that it's owned by the government of Ghana.
And yet they still obviously supply the gas nonetheless, although they are owed.
Exactly.
Something needs to give, right? Something must certainly give here. What must give?
Something must give. Something must give, Evans. And again, I think we can't run away from the root cause of the problem. The root cause of the problem is that Ghana Gas, they process the gas. They push the gas to the power producers. The power producers are unable to pay them. The little money they get, there's a mechanism in place that they share, and consistently the state-owned utilities, including Ghana Gas, is actually not getting full recovery, including even the IPPs. So, but the real problem, Evans, is that let's fix the collection problem at the distribution end, because the PURC approves a tariff that is supposed to pay for the cost of fuel, pay for all the cost of the entities in the value chain. If we don't collect the money, this problem will continue.
Thank you very much. Ishmael Ejikunhene is an energy analyst helping us unpack the PIAAC report that has been flagging the challenges in that in the sector, in the petroleum sector broadly. So listening to Newsnight, you enjoy 99.7 FM. We see death every day. The words of 46-year-old end-stage kidney failure patient Gifty Labi. Her condition has prevented her from passing urine for the past 11 years, relying on dialysis treatment to remove waste from her body. However, getting money for the twice in the week session continues to be a challenge for her and many others. As you may notice by now, we've been running the dialysis crisis series a year on in the last 1 week. There have been some commitments made on the back of the initial dialysis crisis campaign that we ran last year. Government has committed to subsidize the dialysis treatment at the Kolebu Teaching Hospital. But as Masoro Agba shares her story and how some renal patients fear that they may not live long enough to witness government's promises to come to their aid.
A press conference by the Renal Patients Association of Ghana is underway. Midway, a woman in her 50s breaks down in tears, pleading for government intervention to reduce the soaring cost of dialysis treatment. Despite her impassioned plea, little has changed since then. This was sometime last year, and the cost of dialysis has only continued to rise.
I've never passed urine since 11 years now. Yeah, because you eat, you drink. Because the kidney is spoiled. It's
meet Gifty Labi, a 46-year-old woman grappling with the harsh reality of kidney failure.
When we are there, we discuss what happens to us. Oh, we see death every day. We see. And you ask yourself, am I the next person? So you ask yourself, who will be next? You know, that you think about it. You're a human being, you think about it. As you don't have money to go for dialysis and you are suffering. And then your face will be swollen. When your friend who has CKD see you, say, where they are tired.
Then you are there and then one person's picture will be sent. So-and-so has died.
I'm now attempting to meet the daughter of a renal failure patient, 26-year-old Stella Owusu. Stella's mother, Georgina Pia, was the woman who cried during the press conference last year. Our story secured her help from the Mother's Heart Foundation, and she now gets free dialysis treatments.
Even bring my mom to this private facility, 460 CDs twice a week. I don't even get it. So it's once a week I get for my mom.
During the Joy News big conversation on the dialysis crisis last year, Presidential Advisor on Health, Anthony Siasa, said government was working on a permanent solution to the problem. Some of the renal failure patients fear they may not live to see the implementation.
There's a document which is built. We are working on that. I know that there's a document.
What is the policy statement on that?
The policy is that we are now doing kidney transplants, for example, in Kolebu, but we should have a law backing the donation, the storage, and then also giving the kidney to
I take note that they use the word should.
Yes.
We must have. Why don't we have it?
We are working on it.
Failure patients say they yearn to see a reduction in the cost of dialysis treatment or it absorbed by the National Health Insurance Scheme. That is what they pray for. And that is what will give them life. Maxwell Agbogba for Joy News.
We keep watching the space, following the promises that have been made to the dialysis patients, the kidney patients, in fact. To see if what comes out of the promises that have been made by the government, it's also by the National Health Insurance Authority. So live here on Newsnight on Joy 99.7 FM, and George Afe is joining me right now with business. Hello, George.
Hi, Evans. And coming up in business, we have the oil marketing companies hinting of possible fuel shortage as they are now relying on stocks at service stations for supply. And the finance minister charges the reconstituted members of the Ghana Revenue Authority Board to work to improve collections. The business news on Newsnight is brought to you by MTN Business. Welcome to the new world of business. Welcome back to Business on Newsnight. Now, oil marketing companies have revealed that we could be hit by fuel shortage on the market as they are currently relying on stocks at their service stations. It is coming after the strike by the unionized tanker drivers enters the second day. Chief Executive of the Association of Oil Marketing Companies, Dr. Rivers Nupon, noted that the situation is getting serious, even though they are committed to working to resolve the issue.
As it stands, my members are selling products that they have in tank till everything is drawn down. Then there'll be no fuel in the market. Sure.
And what are some of the interim measures that have been implemented to manage the situation from your end?
Yeah, I mean, what I have to say is that there have been issues that we are aware of, and we have been dealing with it with the regulators and stakeholders, including TUC, because there are remuneration issues here.
So I'm wondering, for how long can you survive on these interim measures you've earlier articulated before the situation gets out of hand?
So you see, without the drivers, we cannot work. Without us, the drivers have no business. So I think we need to understand that it's a mutual benefit game you're having here. And it's a marriage, you understand? It's like a husband and wife marriage here. Mm. Everybody's playing a role. Today, the commodity off-takers, which is you and I, and choose to go on strike. And he said, you're not going to buy fuel again because of price increase. All right? That's also a sit down. That will affect the demand. So as they are the ones that are the vehicle to transport the fuel, what that means is that if they cease to supply or deliver or distribute the fuel to the stations, you and I are not going to have fuel to purchase.
I mean, that is alarming.
That it's serious. I mean, they are admitting that it's just at the stocks at the service stations. And when they are done and this issue is not resolved, prepare for shortage on the market.
That is definitely alarming. I want us to run some checks across the country, what the situation is, because we know this is day two.
Yeah.
So it's been going on now for 48 hours. Yeah. What has been the impact? I want to take us now to Nana Bwacha Yadom in the Ashanti Regional Capital, Kumasi.
According to the union, despite a numerous attempt to secure its approval, the board remains hesitant to make a decision, much to the disappointment of the drivers. Sampia Edmund Baba is chairman of the union.
We've been waiting all this while just because of one or two administrative bottlenecks that has been created by some particular OMCs. We have some OMCs who are transporters and OMCs, oil marketing companies, at the same time. That is why we are now here.
He says the union is unwilling to call off the strike until the said agreement is endorsed by the NPA.
You can threaten us, but we also go to work.
Some drivers also shared their dissatisfaction with the NPA.
Yes, we are going to be a bank. Yes, we are going to be a bank.
We also need the payment of our salaries through the bank. We need to get access to loans.
The said agreement with the National Petroleum Authority started somewhere 2017. For the tanker drivers, the government is refusing to endorse the agreement they had, which had to start in November last year. Until the agreement is being endorsed by government and the National Petroleum Authority, the tanker drivers are threatening not to resume work. For Joy News, my name is Dana Bwacha Dankwa Yadom, Kase.
That is from the Ashanti region. Yeah. I want us also hear what's happening in the Western region. In Natalia Kansa has also been following that for us and joins us on the phone right now. Ina, what can you report from the Western region?
Yes, Evan. So usually the Western region is busy with the tanker drivers going up and down, but today it has been quiet for them. You could barely count one of this moving on the street. And so the strike is in action here in the Western region from what I have encountered today.
Thank you, Ina. Now, George, I guess the central issue now to pursue is when will this be resolved?
Yeah. It looks like Ivan's quite serious, and even the both parties have all taken some entrenched position right now with respect to the oil marketing companies and even the tanker or unionized tanker drivers as well. And the situation is quite fluid, Ivan's.
It is. Let's get some clarity. Maybe they may have reached some agreement tonight. We don't know. Let's bring in the Ghana National Chairman of the Petroleum Tanker Drivers Union, George Nyaunu, joins us right now. Hello, George. Thanks for time here on Newsnight. How close are you to resolving this impasse?
Hello, good George. Good evening. How are you, my brother?
I'm doing great. How close are you to resolving this?
By His grace, I'm fine.
Yeah, how close are you to resolving this?
Oh, yeah, thank you. Yes, as I rightly said, we prepared serving the country so that our mothers, fathers will get fuel to operate. As I speak to you, not just about 15 minutes ago, I had a call from one of the authorities that a meeting has been scheduled for us tomorrow morning, 4 o'clock, to resolve the issue. And that is exactly what we are looking for. So, God willing, tomorrow we'll go and listen to them. If only they were able to solve our problem, then the case ends. But if not, then we are continuing.
I mean, since you're meeting tomorrow, why don't you call off the strike and go into the meeting?
You know very well that authorities or opinion leaders, when they call you to go and do this, I will do it. After doing it, they sit down. And that is exactly what I said earlier on, that that is what they have been doing to us. They will call us, you go there, so you just call the strike off, we will do it for you. Immediately the strike is called off, they sit down somewhere and relax. Then within a week, 2 months, tanker drivers come back on the street and say, we'll be on strike. Then the public will look as if, they'll be looking at tanker drivers as if we always like calling for strike. That is not the issue. So this time around, yes.
Okay. The OMC say they are opposed to that, and that is the tanker owners who should be paying you.
The tanker owners should be paying with the drivers.
Yes.
Yes, I stated this thing clearly that yes, that exactly supposed to be the case. Way back, that is how it is. But I said it over and over that the moment the money gets into the pocket of some of the tanker owners, they refuse to pay the drivers, and that is the challenge that we are having.
So why don't you stop the job? I mean, why don't you, if your employer is not paying you, you quit and find another job? Why have you all now decided to lay down your tools across the country because employers aren't paying some of your members?
If your employer is not paying you, quit the job. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, but if my employer isn't paying me, I'll leave and go to another media house if they will pay me.
Okay. If this is what you're saying, then I don't know how to answer the question again.
Yeah,
because I know very well. Listen, I know very well that even in our churches, when there's issue, church authorities call and solve the problem. So I'm thinking we rather need to solve the problem than fighting. You get it? Well, that is exactly what we are doing. And we all know that you are there for me, I'm there for you. We are Ghanaians. All right? So if you are going wayward, that doesn't mean I should look at you and then you go wayward or you are dying.
So this strike will continue tomorrow?
Thank you so much.
Okay. Well, that there is tanker drivers and their rep there speaking to us on this.
And the oil marketing companies, even they're also warning that they could be forced to move away from these unionized drivers when it comes to cutting or transporting these products if the issues are not resolved. We have more in this report.
The marketing firms noted that this option is being considered as they struggle to resolve concerns of the tanker drivers. The Association of Oil Marketing Companies, in a statement earlier today, maintained that issues of driver service conditions should be by owners and not by regulation intervention by the National Petroleum Authority. On debates about some drivers not being properly compensated by their owners, the Association of Oil Marketing Companies, in the statement issued earlier today, asked the drivers to submit their name for the necessary action to be taken. But for some industry watchers, it's just a matter of time before we start seeing vehicles lining up at various service stations in the capital if this impasse is not resolved now.
And it's a business tax reform. Quite interesting development even there. And I'm saying that looking at the entrenched positions that have been taken, we should brace ourselves for some interesting days coming.
But I'm curious, the OMC, do they have tanker drivers of their own?
About 50% of them rely on these unionized tanker drivers.
But if they're going to wean themselves off the unionized tanker drivers, then they must get their own drivers.
Maybe they could do that.
Okay.
In other business news, the Minister of Finance, Dr. Mohamed Amin Adam, is asking members of the reconstituted board of the Ghana Revenue Authority to work with other agencies to reduce tax non-compliance and deal revenue leakages. The minister said this when he inaugurated the reconstituted board of the Ghana Revenue Authority in Accra today. He noted that the current challenges facing the economy makes a strong case for everything to be done to improve our revenue situation.
The fact that our medium term target is to achieve a tax to GDP ratio of about 18 to 20%. And therefore, they need to put in measures and to bring efficiency to.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
In their operation to ensure that we reach that target, because that is the level that really will show that we are indeed a middle-income economy, and we can then undertake projects that is expected from a middle-income economy to bring development to our people. But whilst I talk about revenue, and I challenge them to increase revenue, I'm also not oblivious of the fact that there are challenges associated with staffing, but also conditions of staff, service for staff.
On his part, chairman of the reconstituted board of the Ghana Revenue Authority and the former Minister of Railway, Joe Gatti, noted that they are aware of the challenging times and they will move quickly to improve the situation.
We recognize the task ahead and we will work hard and we'll continue engaging with the public. Luckily, quite a number of us have been in the private sector for some while. We know the allegations that are made from people about the alleged harassment and so on. I also know as a fact that the people in GRE are trying to meet targets. Development comes with tax. So it's the balance. And we'll be counting on people like
the Association of Ghana Industries. And that's all for business on Newsnight.
John, thank you very much. Ms. Bao, how are we?
Well, evens, we're good. We're good. It's quite a rainy day. But let's do some Olympic qualification, because after failed attempts in Senegal and Italy, the national amateur boxing team, the Black Bombers, they're in Thailand to take part in a special qualification tournament for the Olympic Games. Now, this very special tournament is slated for Saturday, May 25 to June 2nd, and it'll be held in Bangkok with a total of 51 places, 23 for women and 28 for men, up for grabs across 13 Olympic boxing categories. Ahead of that, president of the Ghana Olympic Committee, Ben Nunu Mensah, in a goodwill statement, charged the team to be disciplined and give their best performance to ensure they secure a slot. He emphasized that it will be disappointing for the country to fail to take part in the boxing competition at the Games. But realistically, what are the chances of the team in this final attempt? Here is Joy Sports' Victor Achitamaklo.
Dr. Onela Satud is the most experienced on the team. She's a process engineer who's been boxing since 2016. When she made the switch from kickboxing. Apart from her, perhaps the brightest spot on the team is Joseph Komi, who's a silver medalist from the last Commonwealth Games and followed that up with gold at the African Games. There is Theophilus Alote, who was hailed for making the quartet of the last qualifier in Senegal, but has won only two of his last four amateur bouts, losing the other two. Henry Malm last fought in February of last year when he defeated Victus Kemavo in the professional ranks. Altogether, he's got 7 professional wins under his belt and is unbeaten in that time. Then, of course, there is 19-year-old Amadou Mohamed, who won gold at the African Games. And, of course, the Leicester-based Mark Kojovi Ahunjo.
That's Victor Achitamaklo there. Well, tomorrow, the pairings will be done and we'll see who the Ghanaian boxers will face. The Europa League final is happening today. Bayer Leverkusen versus Atalanta. Bayer Leverkusen are on a 51-game unbeaten streak. So the big question tonight is, will Atalanta be the ones to stop them?
I don't think so.
Well,
I don't think so.
Well, Javi Alonso.
And that's the coach I want for Manchester United.
You want Javi Alonso?
Absolutely.
Okay, great.
We should just break the bank and go and bring him. Mm. Everybody has a price, you know that?
Yeah, that's true. Anyway, that's it.
Thank you, Ms. Bao. Now, in the lead up to the election 2024 in December this year, issues surrounding Ghana's falling CD will be key. Today, in Fact Check, we focus on claims by minority leader, Dr. Kesela Tofosing, when he told us at the press conference that the vice president and the presidential candidate of the NPP, Dr. Mohamud Bawumia, must stop his offbeat dance and focus on the dancing CD.
First, let's start with the very obvious claim that the recent depreciation of the local currency against the dollar has depleted working capital of traders, especially importers.
Traders, especially importers, require more money to buy or import the same quantity of items that they could have previously purchased with less money.
This claim is true. According to Bank of Ghana's exchange rate tracking statistics, the CD since the beginning of the year has lost more than 10% of its value to the dollar at the interbank level. The same data made available by the central bank shows the dollar is still trading above 13 cedis 80 pesos at the interbank level, which is significantly higher than the 11 cedis 89 pesos it began the year with. So definitely, importers need more cedis to purchase the same amount of dollars, hence the depletion of their working capital. Now let's focus on a more categorical claim on the cedis exchange value to the dollar. Before the NDC left office in 2016,
when the NDC government was exiting power in December 2016, under the leadership of then President John Mahama, the CD was trading at 3 cedis 80 pesos to $1.
This claim by the minority leader is completely false. According to the Bank of Ghana July 2017 summary of economic and financial data, the CD ended 2016 at 4 cedis 20 pesos to the dollar. In fact, the exchange value for $1 was never below 4 cedis in the entire month of December 2016.
And that's Fact Checking Wednesday. If you want to stay with us every Wednesday, we'll fact check somebody here on Joy 99.7 FM on News Night. Of course, as we approach elections, it's going to be one of the very important offerings we give you as part of our election headquarters coverage. Now, some news just coming in. Hope Singh Adoye, who's a former MPP parliamentary candidate who quit the governing party to join Alan Chemanting, the former trade minister, has been arrested. We can speak now to Yababia Samwa, who speaks for Mr. Chemanting, who himself a lawyer and a former MP for Adenta, joins us right now. Mr. Yababia Samwa, thanks for the time here on Newsnight. What happened? Why was he arrested?
He received... Good evening, and good evening to your listeners, Evans.
Great to have you. What happened?
Good. Well, he was invited by the police to be at the headquarters at 12 noon today, and having informed me, I accompanied him. Headquarters then referred him to the regional headquarters, and we've been in the regional headquarters all day, and then at 6 p.m., the region decides that he needs to be detained pending a decision about what to do. So they've sent us to the ministry's police station. So I'm speaking to you from the ministry's police station where he's been detained.
Detained? Has he been charged with anything?
No, he's not been charged with any offense yet. They say they are investigating a matter of publication of false information.
So,
but he's not been charged. He's not been formally charged.
Is he in the cells there?
Not at the moment, inside the cell, but he's behind the counter, as we say, local parlance, counterback.
And they are detaining him until they get direction as to what to do.
Exactly. That's what we've been told, that they need instructions from above, so they are detaining him until they receive those instructions.
He may have to sleep there tonight, from what you know.
I can't tell, but I don't think it's fair. Because if you invite somebody formally and politely, and the person responds to your call formally and politely and comes to you, and it's not an offense, you haven't even charged him formally, but you tell him you are investigating something about publication of false information. This is not murder. Publication of false information is not murder. And even murder is available in Ghana. Mr. Hope Diadora is not about to run away from Ghana or from his home because the police intend to charge him formally with publication of false information. So to go to the extent of keeping him all day in the police station and then bring him over to the ministries to detain him, you point fingers backwards at yourself that there's something political at play. And it's not fair. This is obviously politically motivated. There's no doubt about it.
Yabo Abiasama, thank you very much. And that there's Yabo Abiasama. He is a lawyer. He speaks for Alan Chamanting, former trade minister. He himself used to be the NPP MP for the Denton constituency. He is now at the police station with Hobson Adoya, who also used to be a parliamentary candidate for the MPP, who both of them quit the MPP to join Alan Chamanting's movement. You can find details of this on myjoyonline.com. And that's it for Newsnight tonight. And you want to stay with us because I have Strong and Saucy.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.